We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey guys, this is Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. This week, I sat down with Kate Woodrow, the founder of Present Perfect, a full-service literary agency serving clients from across the globe. Kate launched the agency in 2015 with the goal of advocating for artists and creatives in publishing, and is recognized as an industry leader in design-driven nonfiction work. Kate specializes in developing visually arresting books that offer a unique perspective across a wide range of topics, particularly art, lifestyle, personal growth, and anything with a practical bent. Before becoming an agent, Kate was an acquisitions editor at Chronicle Books, where her experience spanned 10 years and hundreds of books and gift products. Bringing that many projects from a simple brainstorm to the bookshelf gave Kate a keen sense of what makes a book commercially successful and how to be a professional collaborator. On today's episode, we're talking about the process for finding an agent, how to create your pitch, and how to find the right publishers. If you have ever wanted to write a book or wondered what the process was like, this episode is for you. Enjoy. Hey, Kate, I'm excited to chat with you today. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, Katie.
So let's start off with something. Well, let's start off with misconceptions. What misconceptions do people have about writing a book?
I don't know if people think it's easy. Do people think it's easy? If they do, that's a misconception.
Well, that's where I was kind of going to go and why I tripped over how I asked this question at the beginning, because I was thinking, how many people I talk to that say, oh, writing a book must be so easy. And to me, it sounds so intimidating.
Well, I think one of the hardest things about writing a book is the maintaining momentum and enthusiasm for the project across a really long period of time. So just to make the book usually takes, 12 months minimum, but often 18 months or even 2 years you're working on this project. And then I think one of the hardest things about it is that you, most of the author's work is upfront creating the book, but mm-hmm. then you have this whole second push around when the book releases and it's like running a marathon. Like you have to have this second wave of stamina to then invigorate yourself to talk about the book and promote the book and get out there. And it's a lot of time has elapsed between when you delivered the final, your final text and artwork, and then when you have to share it with the world.
I did not realize that timeline was as long as that is. I mean, I knew things didn't happen overnight.
Yeah,
either,
it's a slow burn, especially for people who make products on their own and, come up with an idea and can source it and produce it and bring it to market really quickly. Publishing's pretty slow.
Interesting. So let's back up a little bit. You worked at Chronicle Books for over a decade, right?
Yeah, 10 years, a decade exactly.
Okay. So tell us about your career path. How did you end up at Chronicle? And then I want to ask you how you kind of transitioned into your own gig.
Yeah. So I had always wanted to work in book publishing or publishing in general. I have a liberal arts education. I went to college in Vermont and studied literature. And in school, I was the arts editor of our campus newspaper, which meant I went to modern dance performances and plays and wrote about, campus art scene.
Nice.
And loved that, being an editor. And I, in college, interned at a book publisher in Boston and got a taste for what it was like to be in-house at a publisher and really loved. So when I graduated, I moved to Manhattan and really wanted to work at a magazine. I had that sort of Anne Hathaway, Devil Wears Prada dream of working at a glossy magazine. At the time, Real Simple was a magazine I was very obsessed with, and I was dying to work there. And so I moved to Manhattan and got in my apartment and applied to all these jobs, and it totally didn't work out. I remember getting one offer from a magazine called Budget Living. I don't know if you remember that magazine. It was great. It was kind of early ready made. And, the salary was $20,000. And I was living in New York City and literally was not enough money to pay my rent. So anyway, I took the first job that I could afford to live on in Manhattan. And that was working at an accounting newspaper.
What a departure.
Yeah, like the opposite of glamorous. And I worked there for 2 years and was an editorial assistant and a reporter and interviewed CPAs and went to tax conferences and was working in a subject matter that was totally not my expertise. You know, I knew nothing about accounting or business or anything, but totally cut my teeth in writing, reporting, even just working at a publication, even though it was this like, you know, not glamorous trade newspaper for accountants in New York.
Well, I want to stop you here. You sound like you're apologizing for this. And we've all taken jobs at different points that we needed to just tide us over.
Don't
apologize if that's where you're heading with this.
No, I'm not. And I mean, in retrospect, I mean, it's hilarious. It gave me a lot of really funny stories from my friends.
Yeah.
But I'm eternally grateful to that job because I really did learn a lot. And I actually remember talking about the job in my interview for Chronicle Books. And I feel like one of the things that the editor who hired me responded to is that I was able to dedicate myself to subject matter that wasn't necessarily my passion and work really hard and, develop experience. And it showed that I was willing to work on things. Like I was really willing to dig into some dirt that I wasn't necessarily passionate about and work hard anyway.
Yeah, I love that tenacity.
So I did that for 2 years and then, you know, for personal reasons, wanted to move out to California. So drove across the country with my friend and halfway through the country, this job opened up at Chronicle Books. I had a friend who worked there in the design department and I had had my eyes on Chronicle as one of the few Bay Area publishers. And so the timing was impeccable. I, you know, arrived in San Francisco, interviewed for this job. It was an editorial assistant position, which is the entry-level job in editorial, and connected with the hiring editor and was hired in 2005. So I started out in that sort of baby editorial position and worked there for 10 years and rose through the ranks from editorial assistant to senior editor. And in the process, got to work on literally hundreds. I mean, I think over 300 books and gift products.
Wow.
And help, you know, see those projects from the seed of an idea all the way through coming to market and just... had such an amazing experience working there.
When I first met you, it was several years ago, and you and I actually taught a class for our Trade Show Bootcamp community about licensing and how to create your idea, but also work with a publisher or someone else to do the manufacturing around it. And I just remember everyone being so enamored with the amount of information you shared about not only getting their ideas out there, but then how to logistically, you know, partner with these larger companies. And hopefully we can talk about that a little bit more here too in this episode. But sticking to your story for right now, was there a light bulb moment for you where you knew it was time to branch out on your own and start your own company?
It wasn't like, you know, a singular event. It was a slow build of changes in my lifestyle and priorities. So like I said, Chronicle, working at Chronicle or, you know, at any publisher, but especially Chronicle was really my dream job. And I sort of achieved that. And then I had my first kid. And I slowly started to realize that my priorities were shifting and that my dream had sort of changed, or I needed to find something else to support my new dream and my new lifestyle. So I had my first daughter, went back to work after 4 months, was my husband and I were both working full time. We both had pretty gnarly commutes. The Bay Area is notorious. I mean, you know, it's just we were living in the East Bay. We live in Oakland, and commuting to San Francisco to my job was a grind. And I had an hour at best in the morning and a harried hour at night with my young daughter. And the older she got, the more and more I started to feel like I needed a change that would give me, you know, more time in my personal life. I also, you know, after doing a job for 10 years, was feeling the itch, sort of the entrepreneurial itch, wanting to challenge myself and branch out. And I had recognized a hole in the market for what I now do, which I can explain. So anyway, so all these sort of things converged in my personal life and my professional life, wanting a change in my personal life and seeing an opportunity in my professional life. And those things converged into taking the risk to make the leap to go out on my own as a literary agent.
Awesome. I think it's so interesting to hear the different journeys that people have. You know, I came up through the corporate world as well before branching out on my own entirely, whereas some people just start straight away as an entrepreneur. And just the different experiences lend itself to so many different perspectives too. So I think it's really cool to hear
where we come from. I am so grateful for having worked in-house at a publisher. I could not have started my business without having that foundation and that inside perspective. I mean, I could have, but it would have been a huge uphill battle. Whereas now, like transitioning from being in-house to starting my own company, that is sort of the flip side of what I used to do, has been invaluable to my experience now as someone now, like now I'm on the outside doing business with publishers. I really understand publishers' priorities and their process. That's just helped me so much in the way that I position projects now and the way I interact with editors, because I used to be one. So I feel like I, you know, understand their perspective and their needs and can better serve them. It's sort of like someone who, you know, someone running a product-based business, if they have had the opportunity to have worked in retail or as a buyer, you know, they're just going to really understand how to then pitch buyers.
Oh, yeah. You're speaking the same language then.
Yeah.
So you have always been a strong advocate for creative artists. I mean, you've had this and it's been something that's been a huge part of who you are. But tell us how that translates to the work you do now. Tell us about the role that you play and what you do as a literary agent.
Sure. So that is my job title. I'm a literary agent. I represent authors and artists and across the globe and help them get book deals. That's sort of like the main part of it. But the bigger picture is that I am their advocate and coach and guide, and I help them navigate the very opaque world of publishing. I feel like it's can be, I don't know, hard to break into if you don't have, you know, sort of a river guide. Mm-hmm. So I work with my clients to develop their book ideas, and I sell them to major and indie publishers. And I help my clients, you know, strategically build their publishing career beyond just that one book idea.
Very cool. So you think bigger picture, longer term goals and all of that?
Yeah, I try to. And I mean, most of my clients all of them have businesses of their own. Book publishing is like one lane of what they're doing. So helping them think about how books are a way to amplify what they're doing in their other, you know, other pursuits.
Very cool. So what's the best way for an artist to get their ideas or pitch their book to a larger company like a publisher? Do they need an agent? Is that something that, I mean, you talked about how it's difficult to break into that world. I assume having an agent will make that easier for them.
Absolutely. I mean, of course I'm biased because I am an agent. Right. And when I was an editor, I, you know, felt the other that you definitely, of course you don't need an agent. But part of the reason I started the company is as an editor, I recognized that so many of my authors did not have agents and they were not advocating for themselves. They weren't negotiating their, you know, when I was offering them in advance, they weren't negotiating, they weren't getting the best terms that they possibly could. And as an editor, of course, it wasn't in my interest to tell them to do so.
Right, right.
So yes, yeah, so I do highly recommend having an agent.
How would one go about finding an agent? I wouldn't even know where to start. I mean, Google,
well,
of course, but
you
where?
Can email me. No.
Right.
I recommend starting with your immediate network. If you know anyone who's published a book, asking them if they have recommendations, or, you know, going two steps beyond in your network, just asking for personal recommendations. If there's no one in your network who's worked with an agent in a relevant category for you, I think you can do some better sleuthing than just Googling by looking at the books in your category, the books that you admire. Most often authors thank their agent in their acknowledgments. So you can start compiling a list of, you know, the relevant agents who might have the category expertise that you're looking for and start targeting them in that way. I find that Googling, like even I, you know the world. And when people ask me for an agent recommendation for something that I don't do, like for fiction, like I don't represent any fiction, I even would have a hard time finding, you know, the right contact. So I think starting and like looking at the acknowledgments and the books that you admire and want to emulate is a good place to start.
That's a great place to start because it does narrow down the focus too, to make sure that it's the right type of agents doing the same type of books that you want to create.
And I think that's half the battle. Like the first step is finding an agent with the right category expertise. And then the same applies to the next step in finding the right publisher, in that you are really looking for somebody who's aligned with, who knows how to sell your, mm-hmm. who knows how to develop and sell the category that you're wanting to publish in.
That makes a lot of sense. So speaking specifically about you and how you do business, because I know every agent is probably different, but what are you specifically looking for when you're scouting artists to work with?
I mean, a lot of things, but I look for artists that have, so a lot of my clients are artists, but not all. Some are authors, but
okay.
I look for people who have specific content, passion, or expertise. So a specific category that they are particularly obsessed with. So that could be science or literature or food or travel, some sort of topic that they have built an expertise and passion around and have demonstrated their expertise and passion for that, which usually comes in the form of having an existing social media following and community. And that's something that, like, it's not just the number of followers, but it's having demonstrated, you know, devoting the time and energy around a topic and establishing a group of people who come to you for that area of expertise. That's something that's really important right. for publishers, not only because you then have this engaged community who's going to help sell the actual book, but you are demonstrating dedication to a subject matter and, again, endurance. Like I was talking about how long it takes to work on a book. If this is something that it's not just like, oh yeah, I had this idea and I want to spit it out. It's something that you've really been organically, naturally, you know, building over a set period of time.
Yeah. I assume too, it would help to, like, as you're doing that research, it would help to see that they're a thought leader in the industry. They've got this community, so that helps to promote the book. But the stamina portion is something I hadn't even thought of. But yeah, if they're talking about the same thing for several years straight, you know that they'd be dedicated.
And something that is going to sustain their interest too. I mean, even the process of building a book proposal is pretty time intensive and requires a lot of thought and care. And you need to make sure that the subject matter is something you feel passionate enough about that it's going to sustain your interest across first making the book proposal and then delivering the actual book and then promoting it, like we talked about.
Yeah, absolutely. So do most people come to you with an idea for their book, or do you help them develop their ideas?
Yeah, most people come to me with a specific idea, which I appreciate. It's difficult for me if somebody just comes and, you know, sort of sharing their portfolio and saying, hey, I'd love to work together. I mean, sometimes I'll immediately have an idea for them, but better if you're coming to the agent with a specific idea. And I think even if that the idea is not quite right or it needs refinement, as it most often does, showing that you can thoughtfully articulate a specific book concept is going to go a long way in capturing the agent's attention. And then from there, of course, you know, it will be refined and improved if it's not, you know, spot on from the beginning.
Totally. So something I do, and it's different, but I feel like it's kind of related. When I am pitching myself for speaking engagements or people request me to speak at different things, I have three topics that I talk about frequently. And I have like a title as well as like a paragraph about what I would cover in that. Like, would you want an artist to come to you with like just one topic, or would you prefer that they've got like a couple of different things they could talk about that you could noodle on and hone in on together?
That's a good question. I think I prefer one thing. And again, like, even if it's not quite right, if the, you know, they're showing me their established business and their social media stats and their ability to communicate an idea, that's enough to engage me. You know, I'll go ahead and have that phone call. And if I see an opportunity and even the idea that they're pitching is not quite right, that's enough for me to want to hop on the phone and talk through it and maybe see if there's something that's, you know, an even more commercially appealing idea in them. I think focusing on one thing is best, at least for me.
No, I agree. I just think sometimes, I don't know, I think sometimes having more ideas, or not even more ideas, but just more of a selection so people can see the breadth of what you do.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's helpful, but it sounds like it's not as helpful in this situation.
I think I like the focus. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we've talked about finding an agent. We've talked about kind of the process of developing the idea a little bit. you mentioned already that the next step is kind of finding the right publisher. So finding the right partner to work with on this. How do you find the right publisher? Like, I assume most of that falls to you as the agent. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. That is a huge part of the agent's job, is having relationships with editors at all the different publishers and knowing exactly who to pitch, putting together a very catered list of the right editors to send a project to. Mm-hmm. So if you're not working with an agent, then I think it can be hard to even identify what publishers to send your project to, and to like even finding the right email addresses of who to address something to. If you are going it alone, I mean, I recommend the same thing in going out into the market and really doing not just online, but going into stores and putting together a list of comparable titles that are either similar in subject matter or appealing to the same audience as the kind of thing that you want to make, and just compiling a list of the imprints. So you want to look for both the publisher and the actual imprint. In publishing, there are five major publishers: Penguin Random House, Simon & Schuster, Macmillan, HarperCollins, and Hachette. Within those five publishers, there are hundreds of what are called imprints, which are like divisions, which are like content specific divisions within those five publishers. And then beyond those mm-hmm. five publishers and all their hundreds of imprints, there are dozens of other publishers that are independently owned and also have dozens of imprints within them. So it's like really hard to navigate. I mean, even
wow, that is highly intimidating.
It's just like, I mean, there's so many different options, and it's that thing where it's like paralysis of, you know, there are too many choices. Like, who do you even target? So anyway, that's a little inside baseball. But if you are wanting to pitch a publisher directly, I think it's about compiling a list of comparable books, seeing who's publishing them, who's making the best ones, who, you know, what are the packages that you're impressed with, who's doing production that appeals to you, and design that appeals to you, and then trying to get contact information at those publishers for the acquiring editors. Sometimes you can see on their sites who's acquiring what. But again, it's all about like getting your project into the hands of the right editor, which, again, an agent helps enormously with.
Oh, yeah, because you have the relationships.
Yeah, exactly. So like when I send a proposal and that lands in an editor's inbox, I know she's going to open it right away and respond right away. Whereas if you're sending to a generic submissions email address, mm-hmm. not so much.
Yeah. And even if it's a no, at least you hear a no back straight away. So
totally.
You can move on.
Totally.
So, okay, you've talked about a pitch. We've kind of alluded to you having to, like, people having to put together pitches. What do people put in a pitch? And is this something that you help build with the artist?
Yeah, I do a lot of proposal development with my clients. I think that's something that, so I have a business partner, Laura Lee Mattingly, and she is also a former editor. And the two of us, having been on the receiving end of so many proposals, really know how to put together a compelling pitch and put the information in that an editor wants to see. So I think we push our clients pretty hard on the proposal process, but we feel like putting together a very thoughtful, compelling vision from the get-go is going to get you the best possible deal with the best possible publisher. It just sets you up for success if you're communicating a really clear vision from the onset. So
absolutely.
I think it's a lot more work than many people think, but it's really valuable work. I think it's a valuable exercise for the author because it's the biggest test of whether this is the book you really want to make and that you're capable of writing. And again, like, does the idea sustain itself over an outline? Does it hold your interest over the process of even writing the proposal before you even get into delivering the book?
Right. What would you put in it?
Yeah. So you don't have to have it all figured out. You don't have to have the whole book written or illustrated. But you want to put in a very clear, succinct project summary that describes the book. You might think about it as like what would appear on Amazon, like, or, you know, an online, an Amazon description describing the book. So that's your project summary. You want to have an outline. You need to include some sample content. So it might be one sample chapter. It might be a writing sample or, you know, 20 pieces of artwork. Just a representative sample of what you intend to write. Your author bio, of course, it helps if you have impressive social media numbers. We can talk about that. It is impressive if you can put together a marketing plan and just pointing to the things that you can do to help spread the word about the book. Publishers are really looking for authors who are motivated to help make the book a success and reach a wide audience. Mm-hmm. You'll want to describe the target audience and perhaps the significance of the idea, like why this book right now, the timing of it. And then
interesting.
Competitive title research. So a brief list of maybe 3 to 4 relevant, recently published books that are not like the category killer bestseller book, like an actual relevant comp title that demonstrates the need for this book in the market, but also the like demonstrates that there's an audience for the topic, but that there's also a hole that this book that you're doing is going to fill, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. It just sparked this interest, though, of like, if there's other books on the market about that same topic, is that a deterrent or is it proof of concept that people want more about this?
Proof of concept, man. I think publishers, you know, publishers are innovative and forward thinking, but they love a good proof of concept. And I think, you know, making a book is a huge upfront investment for a publisher. And it's really helps them if they have a successful comp title that they can point to demonstrating the market. So okay. They can base their sales projections upon that comp title. So yes, you want to be able to point to at least a couple titles that appeal to a similar consumer.
Okay. And in terms of compensation, is there like, I don't need to know what people are making necessarily, but like, you know, is there an advance for an author or is it based on royalties of sales? Like what's kind of a typical payment structure for writing a book and being paid for it?
An author should expect to get an advance and royalties. So the advance is money that's paid up front and is the author's to keep, no matter if the publisher sells 0 copies or 1 million copies. Okay. It's typically paid out in halves or in thirds across the process of between signing the contract and delivering the content. And then royalties are a percentage of sales. So they're either paid on retail, which is a percentage of the retail price, or on net, which is a percentage of what the publisher nets, what the publisher right. earns.
Okay. Is there like an industry standard with regards to what royalty percentage or range that people should consider it that would be good?
Yes, but they're category specific. So it's different for, okay. you know, even within children's book publishing, there are standards for board books versus picture books. And then in adult publishing, different standards for nonfiction and fiction and hardcover and paperback and digital royalties and audio royalties. And there are a lot of different royalty rates in every single book contract.
Well, this is why they need an agent like you.
It is why they need an agent like me. It's true.
Well, you know, this was a lot of great information. You dispelled some myths I had. I'm not looking to write a book right now, but I know a lot of people in my audience are. They're considering different styles of books. And actually, I have a question going back to the pitch one more time.
Yeah.
Is it better to have a functional pitch that includes all of the finite information that you just laid out, or is it better that's maybe not as beautiful? Huh? You know, it's content rich, but it's not very pretty. Or is it better to have something that's kind of pretty and still has all the content? Does pretty matter in a pitch?
I think so. I mean, well, going back to the types of books that I pitch, you know, I specialize in visually driven nonfiction. So visuals are super important to the editors that I sell to.
Yeah.
So even books that don't have artwork, but are just, you know, text driven, I think having it be aesthetically appealing is important in the type of work that I do. But that's not to say that you need to like, so I think one important thing about putting together a pitch for an agent or for a publisher is you want it to look professional and polished, but don't feel the need that you need to figure everything out. You want to leave some room for the agent and editor to have some input as well and to bring their expertise mm-hmm. to it and to help you develop it. You don't want it to have it so airtight and be so attached to this specific execution of it that you're not open to collaboration, because no. publishing really is genuinely such a collaboration. There are a lot of cooks in the kitchen developing the idea into the strongest possible book. And so I think entering into it with truly a genuinely open mind about, you know, making the strongest book is going to set you up for success. I think people who have the hardest time with book publishing are those who are used to making things entirely on their own, calling all the shots about the design decisions and the content decisions and the strategic, you know, even packaging decisions. And
yeah.
That's not the process in traditional trade publishing.
Yeah, you got to be flexible.
And I mean, best case scenario, you're working with a publisher who's well aligned with your vision and, you know, shares the same vision and is just helping you improve and amplify what you came up with on your own.
I love that. That's really helpful. Well, what's next for you and Present Perfect, your agency?
Well, we are in year three and...
So crazy already. I can't believe it.
I know. It's so great. We're having a blast. We're, you know, we have a really strong client roster. I feel like I'm like getting to the point where I'm reaching client saturation, which is, you know, a good problem to have. That I wish I could say yes to everyone. And I'm starting to have to say no, having to say no to people because I just don't have room to be their best advocate. You know, I don't want to take on too much. So finding that balance. And my partner and I are looking at growing the agency. You know, we've been approached by several people recently who are interested in joining the agency, which is of course flattering. So we might be bringing on more agents with different category expertise that would complement ours. For example, a children's book agent or a cookbook agent, you know, someone who's selling a different category than Laura Lee and I are.
Uh-huh.
And we're looking at ways of expanding our services for our clients. So offering new business opportunities beyond publishing for our clients. So we'll see where that goes. And we just finally started an Instagram account. That was something that when I was running the business on my own, I just like did not have the bandwidth to do and always wanted to. But it's such a fun way to share news about our projects and process and just like share that part of my life. I mean, my own personal Instagram account is all my kids all the time. And
mine too.
Yeah, it's been nice to have an outlet to share what I'm working on professionally too.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. I'll have to go look it up. I don't think I'm following you yet, so I will. But that leads me to my next thing. Where can people find you online if they want to learn more about Present Perfect, your services, and the projects that you're working on?
Yeah. Well, our website is presentperfectdepartment.com. Department is abbreviated DEPT. So presentperfectdept.com. And we have all of our client list on there and books that we've sold and more about what Laura Lee and I are looking for. And on Instagram, we're Present Perfect Lit.
Awesome.
So Present Perfect LIT.
Excellent. We'll be sure to include those in the show notes too. But Kate, thank you so much for spending the time today walking us through the process of writing and getting a book out to publish. This is, like I said, this is something a lot of my clients have been interested in, but I didn't know anything about. So I'm like, I got to get Kate on the podcast to tell everybody how this works. So thank you.
It's my pleasure. And I'm always open to queries. I love hearing from people and helping creatives figure out how, you know, a book can amplify the other parts of their business.
Awesome. Well, thank you again.
You're welcome.
Hey friends, are you preparing for trade show season and having a tough time dealing with all the details? Well, I have a new free on-demand workshop that will help you maximize your trade show investment and keep wholesale orders coming in long after your trade show ends. If you're interested in joining me for this free masterclass, head on over to theboothblueprint.com to sign up. Again, that's theboothblueprint.com. I look forward to having you. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.